So State of Idaho versus Mallory, docket number 48045. Here on behalf of Ms. Mallory is Mr., is it, how do I say your last name?
I pronounce it Cook, just like C-O-O-K. I'm not sure how it's intended to be pronounced, but that's what we do.
I will do what you do and say Mr. Cook. Here on behalf of the state is Mr. Jorgensen. Mr. Cook, are you ready to go forward?
Yes, Your Honor, I am.
Go ahead then, please.
Thank you. This is a case, of course, which arises out of allegations that a defendant, Anna, Annette Mallory, had misappropriated some property. It was charged in a two-count indictment back in May 19th of 2019. That complaint, not an indictment, the complaint is located at records pages 10 and 11. And the thrust of the argument in this case is that the restitution amount that was finally ordered by the district court, the Honorable Scott Wayman, has violated the provisions of Idaho Code Section 19-5304 in a couple of ways. First of all, the argument, and I'll pretty much rely upon the briefing that was written by Ms. Mallory's former counsel, Mr. Greg Horn, who was trial counsel in this matter. And Mr. Horn is present in my office with me today, as is Ms. Mallory. But the case has some interesting twists. I'm sure it's one that probably calls out to Judge Lorello, because it seems to have some parallels with a case that you argued before the Idaho Court of Appeals and the Idaho Supreme Court some years ago, called State versus Christy L. Hurles, Hurles, I think, H-U-R-L-E-S, which was a restitution case as well. And the challenge is in the interpretation and application of Idaho Code Section 19-5304, you know, to the facts of a case where the restitution which was ordered was not ordered in conjunction with any charge to which Ms. Mallory pleaded guilty or was found guilty of committing. And Idaho law, with the Richmond case, the Corbis case, and more recently the Hurles case, seems to be abundantly clear that restitution is not appropriately awarded against a defendant unless it arises out of the crime for which the defendant was convicted. And the exception to that rule, created by the Court of Appeals and also affirmed by the Idaho Supreme Court on numerous occasions, is if the defendant consents to pay restitution other than in conjunction with the case or the charge for which the defendant was found guilty or pleaded guilty. And that is the first issue that Mr. Horn raised in the brief before this court, was whether or not Ms. Mallory had consented to the entry of a restitution order, which was tied to a charge which was dismissed in this matter. The quirky thing about the case is that the plea was entered back in December 13th of 2019, and the proceedings that occurred before the court that day are found on the record on page 137. The entry of plea hearing lasted just a little over 3 minutes. And we can tell from the record, again at page 137, that the clerk's minutes of that plea hearing, that the concept of restitution was not discussed with the court at all by any party prior to the time that Ms. Mallory entered her plea. Rather, what happened during the plea hearing was that the judge called the case, asked what the parties were going to be doing. Mr. Horn, on behalf of Ms. Mallory, responded that she would be pleading guilty to the burglary count two, with all the other charges to be dismissed. The county prosecutor answered simply, that is correct. Judge Wayman then indicated that, went through the litany of rights and penalties and the general rigmarole, I guess I'll use the word that comes to mind, that is engaged in with, of course, part with defendants prior to the entry of plea, and then the court accepted the guilty plea. The issue of restitution wasn't raised until some months later. And this case has another interesting twist because there's a substantial amount of time that had elapsed between the entry of the plea in December 13th of 2019 and the time that the case finally went to sentencing in May of 2020. And that, of course, is related to the COVID shutdowns and all the hassles that parties and litigants and courts faced during that period of time. Somewhere in between the time of the December 13th, 2019 entry of plea to count two burglary and the sentencing, a sentencing pretrial or a pretrial settlement offer, which apparently had been entered into between the parties prior to December 13th of 2019, was ultimately filed with the court. And that pretrial settlement offer can be found on page 155 of the record. There are a couple of legal concepts that arise, and the Hurls decision is, State versus Christie L. Hurls decision is a good one to encapsulate the law that applies to these types of things. And the couple of legal concepts that are important are that The terms for a pretrial settlement offer, if they're ambiguous, are construed against the state. This court and the Supreme Court have consistently held that the state has the duty of getting the plea agreement before the court. And the issue with respect to restitution is especially important given the provisions of Idaho Code Section 19-5304 sub 2, which have been relied upon by this court and the Idaho Supreme Court to suggest that the defendant is not to be ordered to pay restitution in association with the charge for which, in this case, she has not been convicted unless she consents.
Mr. Cook?
Yes.
Can I interrupt you for a moment? Because I am looking at the transcript from the one of the sentencing hearings. And in that hearing, the court specifically asks whether the appellant is consents to restitution being determined. So he says, all right, so let's make sure I'm clear on this, Mr. Horn. Your client is willing to consent to the court determining the restitution amount for economic loss or injury for the Hayden Lake Eagles arising out of the conduct that was charged in the count in the complaint where they were named as the alleged victim, which has now been dismissed, and they are no longer before this court. Is that correct? That's correct. Why is that not consent to the district court determining restitution on behalf of Hayden Lake Eagles in the dismissed charge?
That is one of the questions that was rattling around in my head. Of course, I'm late. I'm a latecomer to this case too, so I'm working like Mr. Jorgensen and like this court from a record that I was not part of creating. And so when I look at the record though, I try to filter it through the contract law foundation for plea agreements. And that foundation in contract law is established quite clearly, especially in the Hurls case that I cited earlier, also in the Corbis case, and I believe in the Richmond case, that the terms and conditions of a plea arrangement are to be determined based upon contract law. And when I looked at that, Judge Brailsford, what occurred to me was that this is occurring after the fact. Miss Mallory pleaded guilty to count two, December 13th of 2019. And, but the issue of the terms of the restitution portion of the plea agreement were not fleshed out until May 7th and May 8th of 2020. And so when I look at this as a contract matter, and to answer your question directly as the best I can, Ms. Mallory performed her part of the bargain in full when she pleaded guilty to burglary in December of 2019. And so anything going on after that is trying to change the terms of the deal on her. And I
didn't the district court, though, conclude in that same hearing that there was no meeting of the minds because there was no agreement about restitution? And at that point, the prosecutor indicated that she would proceed with recharging the grand theft if there was no valid plea agreement.
And that is correct, Judge Brailsford. That's another one that's been rattling around in my mind as I tried to figure out, sort out how all this would play out. And I did not find any Idaho case law on whether or not there might be some kind of a quasi-contract concept like estoppel that would apply to a restitution hearing. What I seize on in the case is that there was a pretrial settlement offer that apparently, very apparently, was provided to the defendant prior to the time that she pleaded guilty. And we know that because, again, that pretrial settlement offer is found on page 155 of the record. We know that because the offer by its own terms expired on 12/13 of 2019. We know that Ms. Mallory did not sign that, again, from the pretrial settlement offer at 155 of the record until February 7th of 2020. And then representations made at the May 7th hearing, I think, were actually maybe it was the March hearing, March 9th hearing, that the pretrial settlement offer had not been provided to the court prior to the time that Ms. Mallory entered her plea. And through that chronology, I think we can decide, based upon the record we have, that the pretrial settlement offer and those terms were not known to Judge Wayman and at the time the plea was entered. And that back in May, Judge Brailsford, as certainly correctly point out, Judge Wayman is trying to rehabilitate this situation and find out if there has been an after-the-fact agreement, after the fact, that is, of the plea, to redefine whether or not the defendant, at that point now appellant, Ms. Mallory, is consenting to the payment of restitution for the dismissal, dismissed count one relating to the Hayden Lake Eagles. Again, I go back to those cases, especially the Hurls case, Your Honor, and for the proposition that these plea agreements are construed against the state. The state has the duty to get the agreement before the court. And in this case, that didn't happen prior to sentencing, or it happened prior to sentencing, didn't happen prior to the entry of the plea, which of course was Ms. Mallory's performance. And, but even if the plea agreement found at page 155 of the record is, if those terms are properly analyzed by Judge Wayman, 5 months later in May of 2020, the law still provides that the agreement is construed against the state. And in this particular case, the burglary count one, which is being, which is what Ms. Mallory pleaded guilty to, was that she had misappropriated a lawnmower. And then she had pawned that lawnmower at pawn one for $150. And the record's also clear that that restitution to pawn one in the amount of $150 was paid prior to the time of sentencing. And so when I look at this case, unless something can happen after the fact, after the entry of a plea, in order to bind the defendant to a plea agreement, which was not disclosed to the court at the time of the entry of the plea, that can be kind of like a consent after the fact to restitution, then I think we have to look at things as they existed on December 13th of 2019, the time the plea was entered. The court didn't know what the plea terms were, but apparently the parties did. And those terms are set forth again on that plea pretrial settlement offer on page 155 of the record. And what that says is that pay restitution, and it's conditioned upon two different things. I realize I'm going over my reserve time. I'll keep on going here for a second. In the second line of the pretrial settlement offer, it says pay restitution / reimbursement, colon, and it has two conditions. One, if applicable per statute, and two, TBD to Hayden Legg equals. TBD, I think we all understand, means to be determined. But the Hayden Legg Eagles were also the owners of the lawnmower that was sold to Pond One. So there's that ambiguity in this plea agreement as well. That
Mr. Cook,
yes.
Just so I'm clear on your argument, are you asking us to ignore everything that happened after that pretrial settlement offer plea agreement was entered?
And that's an interesting question, Judge Lorello, and you're the perfect judge to ask that question, because I think that the Hurls case that you argued before the Idaho Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court addresses that issue to some extent, because we look at the Hurls case, the decision from the Idaho Supreme Court, which of course sent that restitution issue back to the district court for additional determinations of the ambiguities, suggested that maybe, even though plea agreements are contractual in nature, and you would think because of that, that they're locked in at the time that the defendant performs, in this case by pleading guilty to count two burglary, that in that Hurls case, it looked like there was some confusion also about the terms of the plea agreement. And the Idaho Supreme Court suggested that perhaps maybe some post-plea maneuvering was appropriate as the parties tried to reform their plea agreement. I'm not really sure that happened in this case. And that goes back to the question that Judge Brailsford answered or asked. And that is there some kind of an after the fact estoppel where in the May, I think, 7th, 2020 restitution hearing, there does appear to be a concession from the defense that the plea agreement at least contemplated restitution as stylized by the court at the time of that May 7th hearing to the Hayden Legg Eagles that may have gone beyond the lawnmower.
So any principle of estoppel would apply to your client from arguing now on appeal that she didn't agree to what she expressly agreed to.
Judge Lorello, that was what was running through my mind when I thought about that concept. If there is some kind of a quasi-contractual issue that can apply to this. But then I go back and say, you only get contractual remedies, estoppel remedies, equitable remedies in a contract case, if a party has done something wrong. And the confusion in this case arose from the fact that the restitution issue was not presented to the court by the state back in December of 2019 at that December 13th plea hearing. And so the court didn't know to address the issues of restitution at the time the plea was entered. And that was the state's feeling. It's the state's burden to get the restitution issue, to get the terms of the plea agreement before the court. And it simply didn't happen. And so after Ms. Mallory has totally performed her portion of the agreement by pleading guilty to the burglary charge, and she clearly thought by pleading guilty to burglary that she was going to be facing $150 in restitution. That permeates throughout the entire transcripts of the May 7th and May 8th restitution hearings. Mr. Horn is objecting at that point in time to a consideration of any evidence regarding to count one. And that's when the court try to nail that down more and kind of put Mr. Horn and Ms. Mallory in a difficult situation by saying, well, you've already entered your plea, you performed. But I guess that if I allow the state to present evidence as to restitution as to grand theft count, count one, I can allow you to withdraw your plea if you wanted to. And I don't know that any of the cases I've seen where this court or the Idaho Supreme Court has dealt with restitution goes to the point where the judge can make take that kind of corrective action months after the plea is entered to say, and unless we get to this restitution that I think the state thought it had, I'm going to do something that's going to put the defendant back in jeopardy of being convicted of count one, and then also the dismiss part two, the habitual offender statute.
Well, that is the remedy for a breach of plea agreement, is it not?
To set aside the guilty plea and have it set back. I would agree with that, certainly, Judge Lorello. I'm just not at the point in my mind where I see that Ms. Mallory breached the plea agreement. The plea agreement, it defines by its terms that the ambiguity is construed.
Well, the breach that Ms. Mallory would allege is a breach by the state.
By attempting to put on evidence as to count one, restitution.
And requesting restitution for the grand theft.
I would agree that that would be a potential breach of the plea agreement. However, if the court had not entered restitution, there would have been no foul. Of course, we wouldn't be here. And so I certainly appreciate the argument, but again, I go back and look at Ms. Mallory and say, well, maybe the problem here is that the state did not get the plea agreement before the court at the time the plea was entered. And then later on, 5 months later, nobody knew what the plea agreement meant. And that goes back to the Hurls case, I think. And if there are ambiguities in the plea agreement, those are construed against the state. And so I think that's where I am with that, with the best I can do in terms of explaining the defense's appellant's ideas regarding the question of whether or not the defendant's performance can be modified at the suggestion of the court after she's already pleaded guilty. And the count one, grand theft, to which restitution is challenged, no longer had application to the question of guilt or innocence. And under 19-5304-2, and the case law, I just don't think that restitution was properly considered. Without further questions, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Mr. Jorgensen, does the state have a reply?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court. If there is one thing that is clear from this record, it is that Mallory unambiguously agreed to pay restitution to the Hayden Lake Eagles Club. What she ultimately claimed was an ambiguity that would have prevented her from prevented any sort of restitution payment to the Hayden Lake Eagles Club. So any ambiguity here goes to something other than her duty to pay to the restitution to the Eagles Club. And as Judge Brailsford noted, when the court gave her the opportunity to withdraw her plea based upon her assertions that she didn't realize that she would have to pay the Hayden League Eagles despite the unambiguous terms of the plea agreement, she withdrew the claim and she said that, I do not wish to withdraw my plea. I wish to go forward on the restitution. Under these circumstances, the district court committed no error, and therefore Ms. Mallory has failed to show error, and the state would request that this court affirm the restitution.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. Anything further?
Unless there are questions from the court, no, Your Honor.
Seeing no questions, Mr. Cook, do you have a rebuttal?
I don't think anything on the question of the propriety of the plea agreement. I would note to the court that the appellant's brief, both in the opening brief and in the reply, also challenges the issue of whether or not the court's restitution award was supported by substantial evidence, which is the second prong of the analysis in Idaho Code Section 19-5304. And I would just stand on the briefing on that issue, primarily the briefing provided by the appellant in the reply brief, which addresses the particular issues with respect to the calculation of the amount of restitution that the defendant had with Judge Wayman's calculation. And unless there are questions on that, then I would conclude my argument as well.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. This case is now fully submitted to the court. The court appreciates the briefing and argument. We'll take this issue under advisement and issue an opinion in due course. Court will be in recess until 10:30 this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.